if you've got a large account and you know you're creating big campaign for clients, you can charge good few £1,000 for a simple video.
Welcome to the Hospitality Podcast.
Where's the lamb sauce?
Come on, man.
I just need a...
This is the lamb.
Where's the lamb sauce?
Presented by Arthur Gomez.
God damn, I just spent $8,000 on some f***ing wine.
And Quentin Wind.
What are you?
An idiot sandwich.
So pour yourself a glass, because we're diving into the world of restaurants, kitchen, and bar. The Hospitality Podcast.
Hey, welcome back, guys.
Hello, hello.
We're back again with a new guest.
Yeah, and this one is quite special. We haven't tackled that subject before, and he's a big food influencer.
Yeah.
He goes under the name of Oli Eats.
Quite a special guest, very different than when we receive a chef or a sommelier, a bartender or a pastry chef.
Yep.
This time it's a food influencer.
Exactly, and not any food influencer. What he does is quite special. It's no one does exactly what he does.
We're going to ask a lot of questions. Don't forget to leave us a little review on Spotify, Apple Podcast. And welcome, Oli.
Welcome, Holly.
Very much for having me.
Oh, no, thank you for coming.
Yeah.
Coming from, 45-minute train. So we're really very grateful for you to come.
No problem at all.
To do the journey. Let's start with a little question on how did you become a food influencer?
Oh, that is it. Going straight in there. Yes, I would say I started taking photos of my dinner before it was cool, and everyone was laughing at me. But I thought, no, I'm gonna give it a go. So that was back when it was Facebook. So this was before Instagram and before TikTok.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So way back when, and so this was when you had like a sort of like Facebook groups that you would like submit a photo of your dinner, and then people would critique it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it was.
Back then when you had like the thumbs up and the thumbs down?
Before
they removed it.
And then, people definitely, let you know how it was, if they liked it or not back then.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's very good.
Did you start at the beginning from a chef career, or you had another career before? What was your first job?
I haven't got any sort of like a professional chef background or anything like that. I started, my career was in hairdressing actually. So I was a hairdresser for 18 years.
Whoa,
so,
nice.
Apart from doing the odd like bit of waitering before I had my, when I was still at school, that was it. I wanted to be a hairdresser. I left school, went straight into it, and then worked all my way up to be a director of a salon. Absolutely fantastic industry and career.
Yep.
And it was only when my account started really, really growing and I monetized it, then I could make the choice to give up a fantastic career but gain a new one.
That's good. So did you start it during the when you were cutting hair basically, so as a hairdresser?
Yes, absolutely. So I just started it. I learned social media, so marketing and advertising on sort of like online, because I was a hairdresser. Mm-hmm. It was like how you started promoting yourself as a young student. So I sort of got to know the platforms. So when I sort of migrated into creating food content, it was quite an easy migration because I already knew the back end sort of reason of how it all worked. And but that was what sort of spurred me on to start off with, was the sort of like the photography and the artistry around cooking. I got into cooking a little bit before that. I moved out very young. I moved out at 18. So I just had to fend for myself, really. So I've done my first 6 months on microwave meals and realized that you can't live off of them. Then started to learn how to cook, which was something that was really cool. I've still got very, very fond memories of that.
Yeah, of course.
Since the beginning, you're doing like some reel where you're cooking some food, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. It was for me when I first started getting into cooking, and then sort of eventually into documenting, it was cooking big meals for my friends. My friends, I had my own apartment. They would pretty much just stay at my house. We'd go out, drink a lot. They would stay over. And then I started, my first sort of like cuisine that I got sort of known for was my breakfasts. And for me, it was like the full English breakfast. And they were massive and they were greasy and they were fantastic. And it's exactly what everyone wanted, on a Sunday morning.
Mm. Oh, amazing. Especially after a hangover, I guess.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
That's amazing. When you start an account, it can be kind of like tiring to see that it takes a long time to get noticed.
Oh, yes.
So how did you manage to push yourself until you became like where you're at now?
I would just say hard work and dedication. I'm you know, very privileged to be doing this full time now. As you know, the easiest way to describe me is as an influencer. You know, there's other words like content creator and that, but that's the general term that most people sort of understand. I've been full time 2.5 years. But I have posted, I think, 3,800 times.
Oh my God. Wow.
And that each of those is either a recipe, it's a restaurant review, it's you know, a day out and it's excursion. So that's the sort of the volume that I was operating on. Now, you know, for me, how I describe sort of like my account and how it operates, it's a bit like a steady eddy. I've been doing this now about 8.5 years, and I've just seen consistent small growth, you know, month on month. Where some people post four times and they skyrocket to you know, to stardom. So every account's different, but I think it is just it's perseverance, because to start off with, the platforms don't know where your account sits. It doesn't really know what type of content you're creating, doesn't know what audience that would like to see your content.
Of course.
And it's all just maths and numbers, and it just means that getting that volume of content out there, you'll then be able to, it will start logging it to your audience, and then eventually you'll start seeing that traction come through. So, you know, post frequently is probably my biggest advice I can give.
With patience as well.
And patience, yes. Yeah. Especially if you're doing these massive recipes, or, you know, you've done this fantastic, you know, arty photo or video, and then about four people sees it. It's hard. And it still happens even at my account. You know, the numbers are obviously a different scale, but, you know, it's still soul destroying if I do a video and it doesn't perform very well, especially if I put my heart and soul into it.
Of course.
That is social media, unfortunately.
Yeah. And so at what stage you realize, oh, so now I can quit my job and start working like 100% for this?
Yeah, that was a very scary jump, that was. So I'm married, I've got children, and I had lots of responsibility, and I've got young children as well. So that was when I started monetizing the account. So how, for anyone who doesn't really understand, so an influencer monetizes their account by sort of brand deals is predominantly how you'd bring in income. And that's when a brand sees your account, they like your aesthetic, they like, you know, your target audience, and then you would then be invited to join in on a campaign that will showcase their new product in it and the like. You would either do a recipe, etc., with it. So, you know, that started coming in like little drips and drabs, but more like pocket money. But then, it got to a point I started seeing regular income. And then it was, then going obviously all official and doing all of the boring stuff, the back end and incorporating and all that sort of stuff. And I probably could have made the leap a year before I did. But, you know, I was scared. It was very scary, you know.
I can imagine.
And especially with, you know, being the sole breadwinner and got the mortgage and everything like that. So I had a whole year of running a busy business and also running a full column being a hairdresser.
Wow. And a dad.
And a dad. Yeah. It was a crazy year. And it was the year before lockdown. You know, we all hate mentioning that, but it was a big old thing. And it was, I think for me, and why I wanted to mention that is that you always see, like, a lot of people think that being on social media is never going to last. And I thought my hairdressing career was going to be it was going to stay. It was evergreen. And then that situation happened a couple of years ago. And I couldn't cut hair, but I could cook at home and post online.
Yeah.
And it was a crazy realization that actually this method of advertising and marketing is here to stay and could be potentially at the time more profitable than what I was doing before.
Of course, So would you say that COVID, in a way, it's not very positive to say that, but it came at the right time for you?
It did. It gave me brain space. It gave me head space. And I think, you know, I loved hairdressing, but it was, and very similar hours to, you know, other hospitality, you know, industries, which was you're in the mornings, you're up the night, you're doing the weekends. And, you know, I didn't have a chance to really put a plan in place. Mm. So just having that little bit of time just to reflect, you know, catch up with my wife, because you're just busy in life, really, aren't you, normally? And discuss things and come up with a plan. I then put it in place. I utilized that time off really, really well. And then I did continue for another sort of 8-9 months, but then I knew I was ready to make the leap.
Yeah.
And but I left in a really nice way as well. Gave a massive notice. I passed all my, cause again, I love the industry, and I passed all my clients over because I've known them for years.
Of course,
you know, so 18. Over to the right people, and left with, you know, handshakes and parties, and it was a really nice exit. How you want to leave an industry and go into a new one?
That's good. And two very different industries.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
And so in terms of followers, what is the, let's say one of the listeners is a maybe an influencer, or you start to be an influencer, or you want to be an influencer, at what time can you expect to earn some money? Let's say, I don't know, like maybe 20,000 followers, maybe?
The cap, you mean?
Yeah,
a lot less than that. So when I was going through the ranks, the big benchmark was 10,000. You know, that was when you started being recognized by... So again, a little bit of like back end of how it works is you've got like PR agencies that are in charge of influencer outreach. So they've got their members of staff out there schooling the internet, schooling the social media pages for these new fresh accounts. So, but you do need a followership. So you do need some numbers. And at the time it was around 10,000 was the benchmark. I think that's when I got my first paid job. Now it doesn't matter. Okay. It really doesn't. You know, you could have 2,000 followers and still be monetized. You can, for various reasons. So one, the platforms themselves can provide monetization. So with TikTok, for instance, they have, if you create, you do have to have, I think it is over 10,000 followers, and you do need to be posting a certain consistency per month. But every video that you create over a minute long is monetized. So you can gain money from that. But when it comes to brand deals, no, if your aesthetic's right, your values are right, you're authentic, you know, a couple of thousand followers, you could definitely be, you know, definitely being invited to places, receiving complimentary gifts and stuff like that. So, yeah, you should never be worried about the numbers. No. Just focus on the quality and the consistency of your work, and the work will come to you.
Yeah, amazing. It's good to hear that.
Yeah.
I'm here. I started my own account, something quite different on social media, so I'm taking it all in.
Oh, yeah.
It's a family affair.
Yeah, it's a family affair. But yeah, it's great to hear, because it's these kind of things that you don't really... You know, when you're on YouTube or Instagram and people are... you know, telling you stuff, and you never know if they've been paid to say that kind of thing, and you never you want to ask, you know, directly to the person, see eye to eye if he's telling the truth, or you know, and from, you know, how you say it, you can see it's from your bottom of the heart, and yeah, it's just really relieving to hear that. I mean, it's motivating.
Yeah. I think nowadays, in particular, I think if you would have asked me a few years ago, I would be saying the numbers are everything.
Okay,
I would be saying, it's about high levels of engagement. It's about having 10, 20, 30,000 followers. And I wouldn't even think about it before those numbers.
Of course.
It's different now. And it's different because of exactly what you've mentioned. Authenticity, you know, people not being authentic, people lying, creating bad content, manipulating their accounts. And I think that we've gone through that generation now of polished. We've gone through that, where people don't want that now. If you look at the people really coming through the ranks very quickly now, they're not using high production. You know, they're shooting on their phones, they're shooting selfie modes, they're you know, their audio's rubbish. They're authentic, it's raw, and that is what people want now. So that's what I would say would be what people need to focus on, is just finding an identity and a value point that they really believe in, and just pushing with that. Because one, you're likely to create content at a much larger scale, because it's something that you wholeheartedly believe on inside.
Of course.
And, you know, people will resonate with that. I think that's... And I can see it sometimes now, even in my content with my numbers, you know. It's I'll do this super recipe and I'll shoot in all these cool angles, or I'll just explain a condiment in selfie mode and it will blow up. And... It doesn't make any sense, but all it shows is that people are screaming out for raw authenticity.
Okay.
Yeah. And so now, do you travel a bit more sometimes, like in, you know, a different country to try some food?
I do, yeah. So this is a new bit. So with all the counts, there is like a scale of things. So obviously, I'm still like... wild of where I'm at the moment. You know, it's still get humbled, but like, yeah, I am now moving into that, the next phase, which is you know, some really cool things. I'd say 2 years ago I'd done probably my bestest tour I've ever done. So what I'm known for is the kebab series. So the kebab series is something that I focus on, where it's predominantly around Middle Eastern and Mediterranean cuisine.
Okay.
And I started off doing it as just to showcase that there's other cuisine apart from the drunken kebab. I realize that lots of people want to see drunken kebabs, but there's also, you know, a plethora, as you all know, of dishes. So I started doing a series on talking about it and getting people, you know, that would normally just go to their local like Mangal restaurant that would order a mixed grill to actually go in there and try these wonderful different meals. And it was a very successful series. I think it clocked and still clocking, I think, around 28 million views.
Oh, wow.
As a series, yeah. Wow, and so I predominantly featured like local restaurants and then went into London. And then I had the opportunity to work with the Turkish Tourism Board and the Michelin.
Michelin Guide.
Yes.
Nice.
And then I went over to the launch of the Michelin in Istanbul.
That's so cool.
It was amazing because it was so cool to see these chefs that are doing wonderful things with that cuisine that it was their first time in their eyes. Because as you know, if you're in the industry, the Michelin Guide and the Michelin star system is the mecca, isn't it? It's the top. So watching this first ever time that the awards would be in that country and seeing these chefs win and how joyous they were and then getting to sample their food was such a memorable experience.
I can imagine.
And I really want people to see what Middle Eastern cuisine is in a refined way or a different way, because it is what they're doing over there is incredible. And I really want to see, and we are seeing it with restaurants that are opening up and they are nailing the elevated sort of side of things.
Yeah.
That isn't just commercialized fusion, you know. Yeah. It's they understand the heritage and they understand sort of like the root of that dish, but they're taking it to the next level, and seeing it grassroots there was a truly incredible experience.
Wow, that's great. So yeah, you're doing a bit of travel as well with your work.
Yes.
And so when you're doing this, is like a partnership you're doing with a PR agency, or like, for example, this time the Michelin Guide?
Yes.
Is there any time where you refuse some partnership because you don't really agree with the value?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So in small scale and large scale. So on the small scale, you know, I am very humbled that I get invited to a lot of restaurants. But I have a belief where I don't do, the only series I do a review, so you talk about food reviewing, is my kebab series.
Yeah,
because I feel that, one, I've learned to cook these dishes, I've experienced them, you know, in the hundreds, you know, and I feel that I've got at least some understanding and skill set to be able to give a review.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't say that's the same with, say, French cuisine or Italian cuisine. So what I tend to be is a restaurant showcaser.
Yep.
So I will look at these restaurants if they sort of fit the bill of my core beliefs, ethoses, and also aesthetics, or if the content's going to perform well.
Yep.
That's when as soon as I say yes, I'm working on behalf of that restaurant.
Yeah, I love that because like we were talking about before in terms of Instagram, now you see stuff which is not true and it's all, you know, paid promotions and all that, and you see so many food influencers who they do reviews but they don't have any background or anything to back up, you know, and you're just like, how can you review something and you probably don't know how to cook, you probably haven't spent that much time in the hospitality industry, and just how can you, you know, it just doesn't make sense for me, and it's just all these paid, you know, all these restaurants that are paying influencers to come in, and it's just to, you know, to do a video and that's it. And it works, obviously, but for me, it doesn't work for me because I know behind that person is probably working at a desk, or I don't know, it has nothing to do with hospitality. And the fact that what you just said is, you know, you filter with your knowledge and match it with you know, the restaurant that is asking to get reviewed, I found that amazing.
You need to. And I think, like, if I've had a dish that, say, missed, I then work out in my head, like, is this personal opinion? Is this just my taste don't like it? Or if it has missed, I'm like, right, I'm going to go home and try and cook this. And just to see, you know, the school there. Because as we know, and I think, you know, French cookery is a prime example of this, and Italian cookery is, like, the simplest dish could sometimes be the hardest to create.
Of course.
Yeah. You know, and I think it's having that understanding. And yeah, I will happily showcase restaurants that I don't have necessarily the background knowledge.
Of course.
And because, again, I am first and foremost in marketing and advertising, you know, and I'm very transparent with that. So if you look at, you know, my account and all of my videos, it will clearly be labeled if it's been gifted, if it's If it's an invite, if it's been, if it's a paid promotion, I don't try and hide it. And again, in my voiceovers and in the captions as well. So, and this is where it differs. So I'm happy to showcase these restaurants because it is just, it's an advert. Yeah. Now, if for instance, my experience falls below what it should be, then I just don't post. Mm. I will speak to the restaurant and just be like, look, it was a bad day, something went wrong. Either let's reevaluate it or it just is not going to make the cut. One thing I will never do is I will never slam hospitality online.
Are you never post a negative review?
No.
Okay.
No. There will be, I might mention some like small things, you know, like maybe if something's just a little bit off, but I will never do an intentional review that's negative.
Okay.
Mm. Because they work, people love them. And it's dangerous.
Oh, of course.
You know, and I've even seen it where, you know, they'll be invited via, say, Instagram, and then they will slam it on TikTok.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, it can be the Wild West out there. And, you know, but I just think I just stick to my lane. You know, the people around me have a respect for the hospitality industry, and I just try and, you know, align myself with those, you know, those people and those beliefs because... There's fantastic things, and I've got so many case studies that of small restaurants that I visited that off the back of my publication have managed to not just survive, like thrive, you know, and going into the outer boroughs of London, into these smaller places and these more community-led things. And there's some fantastic other influencers as well. It's not just me that have, you know, put some of these places on the map, all just from, you know, doing a video online. So it is a powerful tool, and I think that when you do get to scale, you just need to be conscientious of how you use that power. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's to use it for good. And everyone has bad days, and you can just have a small talk offline.
Of course.
And you can rectify these things very, very easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you're completely right. I saw like a real, I think it was a few months ago, who is a food influencer in London as well, and she's like smashing a very famous restaurant in London.
Oh, yeah?
You know, on Piccadilly. And like the comments was crazy because there was like maybe 20% of people saying like, oh, it's not true, I'm a regular there, it's always very nice. And 80% of people who I'm sure they've never been in this restaurant, but because they trust, you know, the vision of the food influencer, they're like, oh, thank you, we're supposed to go with my husband next week, but we just canceled our booking. Oh,
yeah.
And I feel like this for like a restaurant, well, it's not a small business, the restaurant I'm talking about, but still, imagine if a small business.
Yeah, it can really ruin someone's life completely.
Yeah.
Like
it's so I think, yeah, when you say like the social media are so powerful, 100%. I think it's and it's kind of scary because at a certain point you can use it very much for your business and it's great to grow your business, but at the same time it can go down so fast just for you know a reel or a video, like just a comment.
Yeah, it's hard. I think also with being a creator on the platform, the problem at the moment is that sensationalism is sales. So you know, you have to, if you want your videos to perform, it needs to have some sort of hook. It needs to have some sort of statement at the beginning. And I think it's about finding that fine line of creating a degree of emotional provocatism to get people engaged, because our aim is to stop people scrolling.
Of course.
Yeah.
And that is so hard. Mm-hmm. You know, the average watch time on a video could be like 0.3 seconds.
Oh, wow. That's not
true. That's how quickly you've got to catch them. And that means that you do have to, you know, orchestrate your video edit and your voiceover to catch that attention. So, and that's why I like mentioning, you know, price to start off with, or was it worth it, or some sort of like hook.
Yeah.
But where do you stop? And I have to ask myself that question as well, you know, and it's, I know what will work, and sometimes I'm like, shall I do that or shall I not? It's a hard dilemma, you know, because that's my lifestyle. I need these videos to work. I need them to perform, especially if there's, you know, there's payment behind them. So I think it's just find that balance. It's like anything, isn't it? Find balance between creating something that's going to provoke an emotion, but it's not going to be a lie or a detriment to the business that you're focused.
Makes sense.
So now that you're living off of it,
yes,
and it's been 2 years,
two and a half years.
Have you got a team now with other people with you?
Or? I have, yeah, and this is all very new for me as well. So things are accelerating very quickly. So I have an agent I have, well, I have more than one agent. I've got a whole team of agents, and then they have a whole team that they operate within.
Okay.
Which has been incredible. It's been really, really good. The thing is with content creating influencer, you know, it's not really regulated. So no one really knows what you should charge, what the value is, all of those types of things. And I was grossly undercharging for my services. Okay. And I didn't know that at the time. Because again, I was still humbled getting invited places, and you know, it was just cool. Like I get to cook and go places and make money. You know, it's awesome. But then there's also I have a family to feed, and there is a job, and you know, and everyone wants to do well in their life. You know, so you know, when I got signed and the agency, you know, explained about everything and how you cost things and stuff like that, it blew my mind. Yeah, because
it was very different, like
hugely.
Yeah. Wow.
Would you be able to say a percentage of like?
Oh, I was probably 50-60% off.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because what I didn't realize is that I saw it as just like one asset.
Okay.
So say you had a restaurant, you'd get me in. I'd create a video. I would then post it, and then I'm like, cool. Well, I can't really use that bit of footage again. It's done. So. Have it. It's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. But no, you know, there's usage rights. There's advertising rights. There's static images. There's reposting it. There's there's all these different elements to it. Mm. That, and again, I think this is where the PR companies have kind of exploited. You know, again, in my own opinion, is that they sort of know that we don't really know the rights and everything like that.
Yeah.
So they might only pay us, you know, a certain amount of money for that video. But then they're putting it as a major nationwide advertising campaign.
Mm.
And they've managed to get a video for maybe a couple hundred quid.
Mm.
And they've put 30, 40, 50,000 pound advertising behind it and boosted it to nationwide. Yeah. So it's, you don't really know these types of things. So, you know, having a team with me now, they can negotiate these contracts and work out where it sort of sits. So everyone's happy in the end of the day. You know, they're getting their assets, they're getting their distribution, and you know, I'm getting accurately, you know, paid for what I've created.
Okay, and who's in that team? Do you have editor or
no?
How does it work?
I still do everything. So I have now brought on my first internal team member.
Okay.
Shout out Nicole if she's listening. So she is. I firstly brought her on to do a bit of admin. Just to help me out with the back end sort of things, because what we'll probably end up getting onto, I've got some other arms of hospitality that I operate in as well. Mm. And then she was quite inquisitive about what I do outside of things. So I got her on board, she started doing some filming for me, and she's absolutely loving it now. So she's like sort of the sort of second in command, sort of like my teammate, you know.
Nice.
Like,
full-time?
She's part-time at the moment.
Yeah.
And we're just trying to work out a way of sort of utilising her and potentially bringing her on full-time. I would say probably not there yet.
Yep.
One, for like sort of like work amount that she needs to do. But then secondly, like, it's still my baby. Like, you know, like, I love... I love editing. I love filming. I've got my style. And I've been a one-man band now for nearly a decade.
Yeah.
Mm. So I'm quite self-sufficient.
Mm.
And I'm having to learn delegation, which is really, really hard.
It's difficult.
It's one of the hardest things when you have a business. It's delegating.
Isn't it?
Bits of your baby.
Yeah, so I'm learning that. But she's a close family friend, and she's done a fantastic job. So I'm really happy with that.
Oh, and in terms of the agency, how did they find you? Or
because
I guess you get contacted quite often by different agencies. So how do you, you know, choose the right one? And
really good question. That's a really, really good question. I've been approached by agencies year upon year, because it is an investment going with an agency, because obviously they take quite a large chunk of the pie, rightly so, because they've got quite an important job within everything. Why the agency I picked, do you know what it was? Was Libby, who's my sort of like my manager agent, she personally reached out. So rather than just sending like a mail shot or you know, just an email or something like generic sort of thing, she wrote a personalized DM to me and then invited me into the office. And that kind of just made it like a little bit, felt a bit special. Do you know what I mean? It felt like it was personal.
Yeah.
It showed that they mean business, because again, you get a lot of people like, and don't get me wrong, respect the hustle, you know, that might be like a startup agency or one-man band and stuff like that. But that was me, as I was doing that. So you know, to come in and see the agency, see all these people and how happy they were. It's a you know, it's a fantastic agency called Connect Management. And yeah, they're hungry, they're young, they love being at work. They love the industry. They know it so well. For, like, you know, early 20-year-olds.
Yeah,
like, I'm in my late 30s now, and it's just sort of like, you know, when I met these guys, I was like, oh, are they the right guys for me? And I was like, yeah, actually they are. I need that hungriness. Mm, you know, they're out there, they're selling me. They're hustling for me, and it works. So yeah, hopefully they like me, because we're in just coming up to the 6 month sort of probation.
Of course.
But like, looking at how it's going, I'm very happy.
See the difference.
I see the difference massively, and they help me with the day to day. And what one of the biggest thing that an agent does is handle the minefield of contracts. So
they're checking all the contracts before signing, etc.
Yeah, and they're big and they're extensive, and it's a really, really important thing. Mm. And I got stung over very heavily in the early stages, just by not knowing what all of this terminology was. Because a lot of the things is non-competes and exclusivity rights. So you might go, oh, wow, this brand wants to work with me. And then you sign away. And then you can't work with another brand in that sector for a certain amount of time.
Wow. Okay.
And that's just a small bit. It can be big. So, you know, I signed some ones where, you know, 6 months, you know. So I'd done one little job.
Wow.
Made, you know, bloody a couple hell. £100, and I couldn't work again for 6 months, you know.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So, and it's all negotiable, but it's a minefield. I have no legal background. Yeah. You know, I cut hair and I loved it. And, you know, I had to learn how to send emails when I got into this industry, you know. But, you know, you never think about the admin sort of side of things, you know. Like, you know, I started cooking. I loved cooking, so I could cook, I could video, and then I've got all this new admin stuff, which I was like, what the hell is that about? So, you know, for me, it was, you know, getting an agent just to go through all of that and be able to go like, no, yes, no, yes, and streamline the communication. Like, they go, like, they start off with, they're like, how do you like to communicate? Over the phone, email, WhatsApp. And I was like, WhatsApp's brilliant. Send me voice notes, super casual, great. So I do all of my business chats with them via that way. And then they do all the formal stuff on the back end. Okay. And it just works, streamlined the whole process. And yeah, it's absolutely fantastic.
Nice. So now, do you still have to find some partners? Or now is the partners are coming to you? I mean, to your agent.
Yes, yeah. So I do both. And I always will be. Like, I think I've just done it on my own so long. And I like it as well. Like, it's networking. Like, you guys emailed me. I was like, oh, you're amazing. It's a podcast. I'm going to come on a podcast. Like, and I was speaking to someone earlier. And, you know, like, I love greenlighting projects as well. You know, so for me, I'm always going to be involved. And they know that. And they're great with that. We've got a fantastic communication relationship. Okay. And so they just handle sort of the back ends. So it would be like a company will go, right, we want to work with Ollie. And then they start the conversation and the back and forth and stuff like that. So what I tend to do, which is, it's a great position me, which is I do all the networking, I tee stuff up, pass it over to those guys, and then they do all of the back end sort of stuff. So it's really good. But yeah, it's good that and they find me work as well. So they've got a team, well, they've got more now, you know, it's over 35 people that are out there, you know, looking for work. They've got their own clients. They can cross over. You know, it's a fantastic network that I'm now part of.
It kind of accelerates sort of the income, basically, because they find you more jobs, basically.
Oh, yes, absolutely, yeah. So, the frequency of work is increased. The income generated has increased. Mm. And the workflow as well, which is great.
And do they propose you other segments of what you can do with what you have ready? So obviously you have, you know, your ideas. Obviously you've been a one-man show, but do they come with like, oh yeah, you know what, Ollie, you know, there's potential for this to go down this route and this route and this route, and we can really make it, you know, much bigger. A bigger thing. Is that also what an agent will do?
Absolutely. So we have like brainstorming sessions, because they'll ask me as well, because like, oh, cool. It's you know, where do I want to go? What do I want to do? You know, and I think I'm probably one of the oldest on the books, so they do have quite a lot of like young guys that have obviously have created one or two videos, and now all of a sudden they've blown up, and they probably need nurturing and putting in the right direction.
Yeah,
I'm the old hat, you see. So like, I'm more like, lead me to it and then get me in and stuff. But they've gave me some fantastic knowledge, you know, advice. So they sort of like audited my account, worked out some tweaks, and it was just small tweaks that, you know, they've given me advice around sort of like, you know, as I have a family man, do I want to involve my family a little bit more into it? And which I have started doing, but very naturally, just, you know, I'm very much, everything I do is going to be food focused, but I want to push out of industries as well. Like I said, nearly a decade in just food. So for me, I'm trying to get into like the music industry. So I want to be like the food guy in the music industry.
That's cool.
So at the moment, I've got my sights set on festivals. And I manifested that at the beginning of the year, and it actually happened. So I got to be on stage at Download Festival.
Oh, cool.
Being a compere, running food competitions, and also on the mic, helping my friends who are doing some cooking as well. So
amazing.
That was amazing. And yeah, that was, even though, and that was actually, I didn't get paid for that. That was probably the highlight of my career.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
A bit of a refreshment, really.
Yeah, like, I'm not motivated by money. Money's great, but it's more, I'm a creative. Yeah. So if I get the right creative, you know, thing, like, I'm quite, if we talk about brand deals, a little funny off-subject one was like, you know, like, there's a baked bean company that wanted to work with me for ages, and it hasn't been right, budget's not been right. They released a sticker, and I was like, oh my God, can I have a sticker? And they'd sent me a sticker. Like, because I've got like a cooler, and I put stickers all over it. It just really interested me. Do you know what I mean? So like, rather than like, you know, sorry, you know, if my agency are listening, you probably destroyed all, you know, any brand collaboration because I've skipped you and gone and got a sticker instead. But, you know, it was cool. So for me, passion projects and things that I'm generally interested in are what really fuels me. So for me, being on stage, being able to create like a, it was only a hot dog eating contest, but it was in front of thousands. Mm. And we got the crowd hyped, and it was just, it was so much fun. I'm really into like metal music, really into alternate culture. So to align everything that my interest into one place was super fun. And so I'm hoping to, you know, get more into that and then start interviewing like bands and DJs all around food. And, you know, because it's such a great subject matter, isn't it? Yeah, we're here today talking about food.
Yeah, completely.
And and everyone wants to talk about it. So that'd be cool, to sit down, munching on some fried chicken or a kebab with like some famous like musicians. Yeah. Talking about that would just be a dream.
Sounds great. Do you do sometimes like some meeting with your followers? Like, I don't know, I will be next week at this festival doing some
like
food.
A meet and greet,
Yeah.
I haven't done a meet and greet. It's something I've started, getting noticed out and about, which is quite surreal. Yeah. Like, I'll just be like shopping. And like someone just come up to me and be like, are you Ollie Eats?
Are you Ollie?
Yeah. Or they're like, I really like your videos. And I'm like, it sort of takes me back a little bit. I need to sort of get used to it, because this is the thing that's like, it might just be my day off. I might be tired in the supermarket. Mm. But obviously they, like people that watch me are used to seeing a certain level of energy in my videos. And also they know so much about me because I document it all. Yeah. And obviously they're a stranger to me. Mm. So they're like, hey, it's ones when they don't, if they say like, hey, are you Ollie Eats? I know where they've come from. But it's when they're like, hey, Ollie, how are you doing? And I'm like, are you a person from school? Are you like, I was a hairdresser for 18 years locally. Like, you know, are you a friend of my wife's? And I forgot your name. You know, like, how are you doing? And I have to sort of like pry like questions out of them. Yeah. And then they're like, oh yeah, you follow me. Okay, yeah. And then I'm like, oh yeah, so what do you like? And then going into that. But yeah, it is cool. And I probably went to do like a meet and greet, but I'd like want to get like put on events, and I want to start getting into sort of like those types of things. And it's really cool meeting people, and it's, you know, it's nice to meet people that you're following, and you know, hear their feedback, hear what they like and stuff like that. Mm. It's cool. It's surreal. It's this year's definitely been like an accelerator year for me. Mm. So I've like jumped a few levels, and I'm still trying to get used to it. Yeah. Like I said, you know, I've got an agent now, start getting recognized. Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
But it is cool. I'm not going to lie. Like, it's cool. I should play it cool, you know, be like, yeah, you know, whatever. But no, it's cool.
And so how do you handle now that you're being recognized in the street? Or as you say, it's very new to you. But like, how do you feel about it? Are you already being more and more recognized in the street?
Yeah, I think I am. Like, it was really interesting. My wife had a good conversation. She's not really into social media. Mm. And she's my sort of like, she grounds me. She just, you know, it's a really good partnership. And you know, she's out and about. Like, I went to Legoland yesterday, and within 5 minutes, someone had stopped me. Like, and she had a nice chat with me. She's like, "Are you ready for the next stage?"
Yeah.
Because that next stage, there probably isn't any going back. At the moment, you could probably fade, and you could probably fade over time. But like, what she's saying is just sort of like, "Are you okay with this?" Like, because this is only becoming more and more frequent. Because she's spotting it from like an outsider.
Of course.
And then, yeah, I think that I think the only thing I'll probably end up missing a little bit is being able to fully relax. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like, let your guard down at all times. You know, have to, you know, make sure you're dressed and not in your pajamas or something like that. You know, those types of things. But no, I think that, you know, the level that I would end up getting to would be still, you know, 100% very manageable. But it'll probably just be, you know, two or three people stopping me in Tesco's saying hello, you know. It's kind of where it's at the moment. But yeah, I think it's awesome. Like, I think that it's and I'll do the same to other creators. I think creators are the new... I hate the... You know, I don't see myself as a celebrity. And what does a celebrity even mean? But, like, I think that that's what people are looking up to now. Like, for me, my target demographic and what I set out to do is inspire sort of, like, late sort of 30-year-old dads into barbecuing and getting in the kitchen and having fun and doing things and recapturing their youth and stuff like that. Yeah. So to meet those people in person, to see them having fun and doing the things that I'm doing, I think that's really cool. You know, it's sort of setting out to what I want. And I just think I just want people cooking in some way, shape or form, you know. And I think it's a dying art, and from a home perspective, and I want to see more people do it, basically.
I completely agree with you. I mean, it is a dying art, and there's less and less people cooking. I don't know, now maybe there's a bit of a, recently a bit of a switch because of social media and, you know, all these people doing inspirational stuff at home or even in the commercial kitchen, giving up their recipes and, you know, kind of giving that motivation to cook at home. But it is harder and harder because we have less and less time for ourselves, and we are, you know, got jobs, we're more and more enticed to go, you know, on our phone. We're shown a lot of, you know, you have to be fit, you have to be going to the sport, you know, you have to do sports, you have to exercise, so you go do your run. So yeah, I believe we have less and less time. And it's so easy to order online nowadays, you
it
know?
It is, yeah.
And you're so tempted with images everywhere, and you're just, oh, why should I cook at home? Like, I can buy this, and this is so good. And should I treat myself? And I've had a bad day, and, you know, okay, I'll treat myself. But yeah, no, I cook less and less, to be honest. Yeah, it's really weird, and I love cooking.
If you want to cook more, you have to watch Ollie's Eats video.
I do.
Yes, it's very interesting. So I had this conversation with one of my followers. He wrote something. It was a bit of a negative feedback, which is completely justified, but he was just sort of like, Ollie, you've really started doing simple recipes, and I don't know if I like them, you know, like, why are you not doing your big showstoppers? And like, the data shows that I've started doing like a little mini series called Load of Fries, and it's normally just got three or four ingredients on the top, and they are outperforming everything. And I think that is that, like, what I'm inspired to, like, I would spend 4 days cooking a piece of meat and love the whole entire process. People don't want to cook for more than 30 minutes in an air fryer. And that's cool, but that's just their proximity. Like, that's what I love doing. People love other things I don't want to do, you know? So I think I want to inspire people. It's that baby steps, you know, it's that stepping stone into actually just starting to buy ingredients. And if I can inspire them just to start cooking, then I can inspire them to then start looking at ingredients later on down the line.
For sure.
You know, like, and probably the same with you guys and definitely myself. Like, I love high quality ingredients. I love the sustainability. I love where it's sourced, the story, all of those types of things. But also in this climate that we're in, that's not necessarily always the case. Now, you know, combined, we've got the vast amounts of knowledge to understand about portion controls and utilizing seasonal vegetables. And we could probably create amazing menu, you know, home menus for a fraction of the prices. But having the mental capacity to do that without that educational background, like I said, I've got a decade of cooking, granted only from home, but, you know, and going to restaurants. And I've got that energy and that incentivized to do that. If someone's just trying to put a dinner on the table for their family, like, that is a lot of energy. So what I try and do with a lot of my content is go, right, this is a, you know, pre-cooked, like, slow cooked bit of meat, put that with this and you've got yourself a hot meal. You know, and then have fun, because I think the fun is the root of everything. Like, if you have fun with something, you want to do it more. So
of course,
find that passion. That's how I did, you know. It was fry ups, it was chilies, it was hungover food, it was big pasta bakes, really simple stuff. But then I was like, oh, actually, yeah, I'm going to use a different cheese. And then that's that stepping stone that I'm trying to encourage people to do. Like, I love it when everyone's like messaged me going, like, oh, that was an awesome recipe, but like, I'd done it with XYZ. And they're like, do you mind? I was like, no, this is exactly what I've set out to do. Like, I want you to hack my recipes because I've hacked someone else's recipe, you know? Like, that's what the intention is. You know, if I can just get people to, you know, rather than pick up a microwave meal and just do something fun themselves, you know?
That's of course. Get creative.
Get creative.
And not to forget that not everyone has a local market next to, you know, where they live. They only probably have like a Tesco's or Sainsbury's, and that's what I love about your videos is you can get creative with what you have next door. Not everyone has time to go shopping as well.
Yep.
So you, especially living for me, living in the city, you don't. Yes, you have every shops and everything, but it's. You're so busy with your day-to-day, you know, do's
life.
That sometimes when I go back home, I take the train and arrive in Deptford. The only thing that's open is a Tesco's, and sometimes I'm when it's Tesco's, I'm like, what should I eat? I want something, you know, cool, not just to open it and put it in the oven or microwave. I want to, you know, create something, and that's where it's quite cool with your videos is, yeah, with what they have, you can actually just put four ingredients together and you know, have fun.
and that's you know, that's how I learned to cook. Yeah. So that's what I sort of like teach. And then, you know, for the level above that, it's like using alternate cuts of meat. You know, I think that, you know, I try and educate around steak in particular. Yeah. Everyone, you know, if you're a meat eater, steak's high on the priority list of what you want to eat. But there's so many amazing cuts at a lot cheaper prices.
Of course.
But then you've got the other things, you know, you're looking at, like, you know, getting a bit deep on the sort of like economical demographics of supermarkets. Unfortunately, like, and this is just through education, you know, the higher economical demographic of a supermarket, you know, will sell more alternate, cheaper cuts of meat. The lower will sell only premium ones because it's down to this, you know, this they've worked out over a percentage of how many people understand those cuts and if they're going to sell or not. And I just think what I want to try and do is like go, right, this cut of meat, super cheap, go and get it, you know, cook with it. You don't need to go and buy fillet or ribeye, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Use this instead, you know.
It's so smart that you think about that because, you know, it's on thought. Of, you know, in that sense. So
and then doing something again, it's taking that, because what I find is that, and there's so many amazing chefs and people out there preaching fantastic, very, very high value things, but they're steering it in a way that, again, it's that, because I used to see it, and there's a friend that told me this about mental capacity, is that people know that they need to eat more vegetables, people know that they need to do this, but it's having that, like you said, when you get off the train, you're in that shop and you're like, oh, I don't have the capacity to come up with these things. So they'll go, right, take this alternate cut of meat and then cook it over fire with all of these random ingredients, and then you've lost them at that point.
Yep.
So what I'm saying is like, take this, you know, you might have to go somewhere like a higher-end supermarket or a butcher's. It will weirdly be cheaper than using your local supermarket. Yep. But then take it home, whack it in the air fryer, cover it in cheese, like, just... And that it's having that link and going, you haven't got to compartmentalize everything. You know, if anything, about bringing everything together, you know, find alternate ingredients or seasonal or more sustainable, whatever, you know, you're in your ethos. But then use the utilities that you have close to you, like an air fryer or a microwave. Like, it's in my strap line. It's microwave to Michelin star. Like, I'm into all foods, and there's always a time and a place. And, you know, was it Michael Pierre White when his last interview was saying like what his favourite meal is? And it's something like a sandwich. Like, when he gets home, it's nothing. And even the interviewer was like, oh, I didn't even think. Like, you think they're going to say something grand.
Crazy.
Well, I know. I guess like chefs, they see that on a daily basis, and, you know, this high-end food. And I guess, you know, the simple little food back home when you're tired and you just want just a cheese sandwich. I don't know.
I think it was a cheese and ham sandwich with piccalilli.
Yeah, there you go.
That's good.
Like, and that was his, like, the dish that is the most emotional connection he has.
Yeah. And coming back to what you said at first, you said there's sometimes there's the simplest thing that are the hardest to cook.
Yeah.
Because you want that to be done at your perfect taste, and
probably
does it, and it's just really nice, and but it's so simple.
Yeah. I think the one thing I do really preach, and I'm struggling with, but I definitely want to happen, is cook to temperature, not time. So it's a small little thing, but it will, as soon as when the penny drops, it blows people's minds that their chicken's never dry anymore or their steak's perfect. So just a little meat thermometer, and there's so many on the market, and, you know, just probe that temperature, take it to exactly how it should be, and you're in for just the best food of your life.
Wow,
all
that's
the time.
Advice.
Yeah, just that's cook good. To temperature, not time.
That's good. Now, I just wanted to say, so just before finishing the podcast, I just wanted to ask you a last question.
Yes.
What's the next project for Holy Hit?
Oh,
for the next year or so?
What is the next project? So I would say, yeah, the timing's sort of gone crazy on this, but like, yeah, so one thing I didn't really talk about is like cooking over fire. Cooking over fire is something that I absolutely love, and it's something that I'm going to be doing a lot more of.
Okay.
So becoming more primitive, I would say, is the sort of the project.
A new series, maybe?
New series, yeah. I've got... So I love cooking throughout winter as well. So I'm outside all the time. Mm. And that's sort of the connection that, you know, I've got. Like I said, I do the fun stuff in the kitchen, but I also get outside and cook as well. But yeah, a lot more open fire cooking, demos. And again, there's a lot of misinformation and taboos around barbecuing. And I'd like to sort of break that. Mm. And there's a lot of elitism in that as well, because I think a lot of people spent years offline learning the trade, learning everything about it, and then they jumped online and they all of a sudden they were a barbecue person. Yeah. And it's like, actually, it's teaching that basics. Yeah. And going back to those basics is something that I want to sort of like focus on as well.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, I want to get people in the kitchen cooking.
Good.
That's great.
It's a question that probably many people would want to know, but when you have a partnership, which is the highest amount of a partnership that you get? Obviously, you don't need to sell the brand, but it's just to give a bit of an image of how much you can charge as a food influencer. So your highest, not income, but how would you say it? Partnership.
So
deal,
like also like a brand deal that.
Yeah,
I've
brand
had,
deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they get broken down. So you can make thousands from posts. Okay. So it's normally depending on what they're wanting. Like I said, earlier about the exclusivity rights, but yeah. If you've got a large account and you're creating big campaign for clients, you can charge good few thousand pounds for a simple video. Mm. But you can monetize lower end as well. Like I said, it will start off with the odd gifts at a couple of thousand, and then you can start charging, and start bringing in a nice little side hustle very early on. So I think social media is misrepresented and also has a bad image, and granted there's a lot of bad eggs in there, but I'm out here as well trying to create a newer light on it and inspire people to cook, document it, get out there, get into their local areas, get to their local shops, enjoy hospitality in its best form, and take photos of your dinner.
There you go.
I think
that
finishes
it.
I wanted to ask for last advice, but I think you just done it.
Holly, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much, Holly.
Being on the podcast. Hopefully, some of the advices and stories that you've had will inspire many, younger or even older. You never know who you might just want to take some pictures as well to start up with, and especially start cooking at home more often. But guys, thank you again for listening to our podcast. Give us a little review or like a comment on our social media and also on Spotify and Apple podcast, and we'll see you for the next episode.
Yeah, and don't forget to follow Holly Eats.
Oh yeah, especially you don't follow
follow Holly Eats, and I'll share this podcast too.
Thank you guys again, take care.
Thank you, bye bye.
Thank you again, Holly.
Thank you. The Hospitality Podcast.